Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Dynamite review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hanfler and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Rampage, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bigger quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Hamlet and Sidgwick to review AEW Dynamite and yet another sensational show, Sidge.
Easy for you to say. Don't use alliteration.
That's why I stopped myself. I was like, oh no, here we go. We've already got one later on this show that I know is going to annoy you.
Don't do that again. This was a firecracker of an episode. Like two of the best TV matches you will see all year. And my God, the standard is already very, very high. I was going to say stratospheric then, but alliteration is the work of so I did not do that. Now, the bookended matches here were just absolutely incredible. There was some nice gradual story progression. Promos were piss funny at times. Just... they're on bloody form, this lot.
Yeah. Thing is, Dynamite was goated last night.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Khan was cooking.
He was cooking, but I don't think I like what he's cooking now. This was such a strange experience. I think this was a phenomenal episode of television, and thus, I've got so much faith that everything turns out nice in the end.
What's your problem, then?
I'll tell you my problem. This showed me, like, four matches I absolutely loved, and then advertised about four I didn't want. Like, it's a little bit preview this, but I don't do the previews of you, so I can say it now. Like, on this episode, full of great matches and cool stories, I was told other stories and other matches that I've got way less interesting, and it really, like, played with my emotions as it went along. It's like, this is awesome, this is great, the now is the best ever. And typically, the other fun thing about AEW is, like, and next week, it's you've already got a graphic that you're wildly excited about, and there's friggin' Matt Hardy on the screen. Sorry for jumping ahead. There's Matt Hardy on the screen when the Elite are finally back, and there's the same goddamn angle taking place and a much inferior version of it with Chris Jericho.
Like, oh my God, don't get me started. Well, you have to get started.
It's the inverse of, excuse me, Jeff Jarrett's on the show next week. Like, it has that effect on me. So yes, Tony Khan is absolutely cooking, but I think I preferred this week's course rather than next week's. It made for a very strange viewing experience because there's two matches on the show I would consider flawless, quite honestly. And yet, it's like, ugh, that. But this is so good. So this is like a great example for me here of letting something play out and having a faith and all that. It's just, there was a couple of like booking decisions. I was like, why are you doing that? Why that? Like more than once on this show.
Let's dive straight into it then, because the show opened, no messing about, with Jon Moxley versus Hangman Adam Page. Moxley walks through the crowd in his hometown, flanked by Wheeler Yuta and Papa Mox. and Moxley and Page obviously brawl before the bell rings. Or I say before the bell rings, quite some time before the bell rings. They spill out into the crowd. Page hits a running boot. Moxley puts a figure four on him. Page escapes by just throwing beer in his face.
I think that was an incredible detail. I'd like to think that wasn't, the possibility of that wasn't discussed. It looked very improvised, however. Possibility wasn't discussed, and I think that was really key to like Hangman Page. You're a complete dickhead now, because that set a tone with me, and I want to believe there was cooperation rather than a real moment of madness, kind of improvised misfire.
I think it was heat of the moment. What did I do that for?
So they get back around ringside. Moxley's going to Pillmanize his ankle. But as the referee's like, don't do this. We haven't had the match yet. Paige hoys the chair at John Moxley's face. They roll back into the ring. The referee's about to start the match. The camera inexplicably decides to focus on John Moxley blading his eye. Just Hangman Page flipping out in the corner, basically. And then they just get into it again and kick the crap out of each other. We went to a break after Page tossed Moxley into a post, and he's already, like I say, just covered in claret.
Good alliteration, that one.
We come back. Page bites his way free and hits an avalanche Death Valley driver for a two count. I should get this ready for in a minute, I suppose, because I sense you're going to want to use it. Page is shouting at Moxley, stay down, but Moxley gets a desperation cutter to take them both down. When they get back up, Moxley hits the front chancery superplex into the bulldog choke and then lays down some stomps as well. Goes for the death rider, but Page avoids it and gets a rope break off a cross arm breaker. Moxley gets backdropped to the floor, but Page misses his moonsault and Moxley just nails him with a lariat. He sets up a table, but he ends up getting put through it himself after Page hits a pop-up powerbomb. Moxley just gets in before the count of 10, runs straight into a lariat and a dead eye for another nice near fall. Page goes for a curb stomp, misses, and Moxley fires back with that huge King Kong lariat of his. But Page eventually gets him, tombstone pile drivers him, hits a buckshot lariat. That's only enough for a two count. So Page decides to use Moxley's weapons against him, a bit like he did, of course, in the Wheeler-Utah match. This time, though, it's a bulldog choke, but Moxley can hook the leg and steal the victory, not in the same way that we'd see stolen victories on that other show. And it was kind of all about what happened post-match here. I'm going to say the word posturing because I sense you two are going to be far more better indeed at describing
that.
That's
good stuff. Jesus Christ, this was phenomenal. Phenomenal TV wrestling. I could scarcely believe how good this was. I thought the second match after the cursed first one was genuinely excellent. This cleared it. And it made me want to see the fourth one. This was unbelievable professional wrestling. What I loved about it as well, just on the finish, because it was, he stole one. They made that trope good in the story of this match and the wider story. The idea was they were both out there to knock one another out. It was a literal fight at the finish. They wanted to work over each other's brain tissue and just spark their lights out. That's the story here. They told it so well at the start of this match where they didn't even care that the bell rang. What a lovely little trick to get over the grudge element of this rivalry now where they are both completely consumed by it, that they didn't hear a bell. They weren't necessarily interested in winning at the start of this thing. They just wanted to spark one another out. That was the key theme. They did loads of head drops to get this over because that is the story. They ignored the bell. My God, that Avalanche Death Valley driver, I thought he'd broken his neck. It must have been just timed perfectly enough. So for Moxley to use his grappling at the finish, what a perfect setup for the next match because it was almost as if he'd sort of betrayed this unspoken code that Page and Moxley had ahead of this match because they both said that's what they wanted to do. That's what they were intent on doing. And Page was like seething, not just because he lost. And he lost in a way that was credible and a legitimate pinning combination. And Moxley trains for this and it's not sold as a disgrace. But he was like, no, I'd rather have got knocked out than defeated in that way. So I don't know how they've managed to get the worst WWE trope over, but they did. And just the drama and the struggle of this thing was unbelievable. Like in every or virtually every back and forth pro wrestling match, what you get now is a counter-driven exchange by the finishing sequence. And it sometimes feels a little bit like the same rhythm you see a lot. Like they are doing it because the crowd are conditioned to gasp and pop for the way that the moves get evaded. It genuinely felt like they did not want to get hit with their weapons because they hurt and they could genuinely get knocked out in doing so. It just felt like they were desperate to win. That tone that is so hard to conjure, like the thought of losing or getting knocked out first was just unfathomable to these characters in this fictional wrestling match. That suspension of disbelief was very, very easy. This was incredible. I don't know if it's the best TV match of the year because there was another contender like an hour and a half later.
Yeah, there was some dark arts brilliance on show here because that, the whole thing felt like a shoot in the way that they created something and it would be akin to how Anarchy in the Arena just felt different to an arena-wide brawl of a typical TV show. There is sometimes a magic in the air and there's something wrestlers are doing that as much wrestling as we all watch, we can't quite see what it is that differentiates one from another. And here, obviously, there's cooperation and loads of it because if you boil this down, the exchange at the end are actually incredibly slick, but the way in which they didn't make it look like they were giving each other their bodies, they weren't lightening up to take these moves. There was the, I think it was either one of the dead eyes or one of the tombstones in particular. Moxley, as you would in the scenario, looked like he was dead weighting him, and yet it happened anyway. So that's like a next level of movement and physical acting to be able to get that across rather than just sliding into place. You know, I'm not being critical of it and one later on the show, but have you noticed like how Jade Cargill's big thing has become about, it's really, right, I've got to make the last bit leading into my finish jaded, like gif-able. That's going to be what people talk about. It's amazing, but the more you watch it, the more you scrutinize it, you see the cooperation and it's just nice rather than cool. This had none of that. None of this felt nice and cool. It was just like,
That's cool.
It's that like jockeying for position into a death blow, which I thought was so impressive. I didn't actually see this as the, they've gotten over this dreadful WWE trope. I saw it as, we yesterday speculated on the preview, what's going to be our Bret Hart Nutter Center getting it done without the finisher? And it was here, instead of in the Bryan match, it was Moxley. Why would he not have a counter to his own finisher in his back pocket? That was stupid of Hangman Page. That was arrogant and cocky of a Hangman Page. Mm. He kind of thought he had it done. Like, to go for, of all the moves, to go for the bully choke when you need a submission to put a guy down, there was an obnoxiousness there. And we've seen this lately out of Page. They're doing something. He is also brilliant at performing it. They're doing something really quite special with Hangman Page at the moment because the interviews, like, kind of show you the nice guy, the sort of quiet, contemplative man, and the matches are just showing something different. This is what Page has had a lot of the time and didn't have enough of in his world title run. Like, if he'd have been able to juggle the nice guy with the belt cut in the promo versus the vicious bastard beyond, I would say, maybe the second Bryan match, I think his title reign might have gone down a little bit better or it'd like leave a little bit more. This was never there in the Adam Cole matches. What he uncorked here, this particular kind of viciousness, never felt half as real as it did here. It's a chemistry thing. It's an everything thing. This is probably like my match of the year and Omega Osprey happened in January and I think I love this more. Like, I just felt the ending put it over the top for me because it felt like a shoot, like the way they shot it. You're right to highlight the blade job. And that the beer was a controversial moment, certainly. But the way the camera chose to capture just a glimpse of Hangman Page halfway through flipping Moxley off and turning around and storming to the back, I was visualizing him going backstage and like kicking a bin over and screaming at like an official to give him another match. I just was like dumbfounded with how real all of this felt. And we both of us agreed yesterday, it's got to be the end. Kind of glad they're not doing the old weapons thing at Revolution.
Do the weapons thing at Revolution.
Who's left saying that now? Yeah. Like just brilliant.
Death match, a Texas death match at Revolution.
I don't think weapon stuff can top this. Personally, just to my taste in wrestling, like a real fight that was within the confines of a wrestling match tends to hit more for me than a weapons match. I'm not sure they can top this one, but then plenty of people would have said that about the second one. Yeah. So you got to give them a chance.
If you lose a Texas death match, you get sparked out, basically.
Yeah.
You don't get pinned, like the pressure on your shoulders for a certain amount of time or the agony's not there, so you have to tap out. Like, you have to get sparked out. And I think thematically, that's where it's going or where it should go. I don't care. I trust them implicitly to take it wherever it is going.
Yeah. Two knockouts got us to the third one, so it stands to the reason that they have to finish it. Yeah.
Just that looked like how awkward Claudio and Wheeler were in there. Just like, all right, boys, calm it down.
The sober ones in a pub fight.
Yeah.
Basically trying to clear things up, yeah.
Newsflash, Slick! The Butcher and the Blade were backstage next, but it was about the Bunny, who's also there with AEW Women's Champion Jamie Hayter. Congratulates her on beating Emi Sakura last week and challenges her to a title eliminator match next week. But Renee's like, well, enough of all that. Let's check out something that's not cool. That's Tony Storm and Saraya kicking the crap out of Britt Baker as Hayter has to run off to try and make the save.
Yeah, just to fold in, I guess, the bit with Ruby Soho checking on Baker and medical. Very gradual advancement. There's at least two wrestlers on either side. Where Shida fits is still a mystery. Where Soho fits is still kind of a mystery. I like this. It gives the division focus. It gives it depth. The wrestlers in this roster are actually interacting with one another as characters. Like, there's now to write home about, realistically, the two angles, I guess, that we got here. But things are moving along. And I'm not saying that as, well, it's a story. That automatically qualifies it as good, because I'm not a dickhead or an idiot. But I do like where this could go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so bigger story's good. Acting was a little bit iffy, I think, in both segments, but I'd rather we have that and have the story play out as it's going. You've just got to go with it a little bit, I think. I still like the detail of Britt Baker, this absolute arsehole, all of a sudden using the easy excuse to be virtuous about something. To Ruby Soho, who we know to be a good egg, fundamentally, that's a nice dynamic. That it kind of plays better than having to watch Jamie Hayter, oh my goodness, and they're pretty shoddy acting on the TV, yeah. But I'd rather this story than not have it.
Next up, the most over-tagged team in the What Culture office. We're facing the Acclaimed. Truth Magnum and Turbo Floyd.
Unbelievable. Go and check out their Dark Elevation tag match with the Hazy Black, because it looks more like a tryout for Brody King and Malachi Black than it does these two. Like, they just chew the scenery with their pirouettes and their flexing and the whole deal. It's a great advert for AEW, because this is like knowingly silly, and this is the place where that gets to breathe, I think.
I think they were called the Outrunners is their official title, but
tremendous.
Why bother when your names are Truth Magnum and Turbo Floyd? Caster's Rap basically said they were bootleg Beverly Brothers, and acclaimed, it was a squash this. Scissor Me Timbers, The Arrival, mic drop, 1, 2, 3. There's even a triple scissor with Daddy Ass. It was all about the post-match here.
Did you catch the commentators and acknowledging the sign in the crowd? Like, it's my 10th birthday, Scissor Me.
Yep.
Everyone loves the Acclaimed.
Yeah. And of course, as anticipated, the guns come out. They want a shot at the tag team titles. Bowen's had a nice line calling them Rod and Todd. And they say, well, let's ask the people, you know, do the Ass Boys deserve a title shot? Boo! They get into a bit of a scuffle. Daddy Ass has had enough, and he's like, I'm pissed off with a lot of you. Might you all just fight it out, basically? And he storms off, and I think it was Austin gets on the mic and says, yeah, walk away, leave us, all that you always used to. Why don't you go and drown your sorrows in the bottom of a pill bottle? And this brings back Daddy Ass, who is a little bit pissed with the mic not working. And eventually...
Tighten up, man. This is going on all the time, isn't it? Like, he was an old pro, pissed off with his dodgy equipment, killing his... This is the man that only ever has to say, suck it, and he's finally got a line, and his microphone cuts out. Like, I'd be annoyed too.
But he says, you
it's
know
happening
what?
Everywhere. And yeah. I'm just, hey, both sides. It was happened Hogan, to Hogan on Raw. Yeah. The Wrestle Kingdom press conference, the mics were all over the place. What's going on? It's not cool.
Basically said, Brian, if you're bollocks all that. Yeah, you can have a title shot.
I really like this because it subverted everything that I thought I was going to hate about where this was going. They are such little rat bastards, such craven little dickheads, these gun club boys, that they are working the idea that they feel abandoned and estranged from their dad just to get a title shot.
The grins when they got what they wanted. Yeah, it was like, don't care about that anymore.
It was awesome. The whole thing was a ruse. Set up so they can make their dad feel exasperated and horrible and say, I know you can have what you want. He's like, cool. Don't really care about this father-son relationship anymore. I want those titles. The facials on the guns here were fairly impeccable.
I wondered as well. This was obviously to kind of make you think the way the Acclaimed responded. They'll give them the title shot, but they're a bit like, what's that about, Billy? Like, they want you to think about the dissension for next week because Billy's got a pick between the Acclaimed and his sons. I don't think it's for that, but I'm interested as to where that goes. Like, the Acclaimed will win next week. All will be well, it'll seem. But it's AEW, and that won't get forgotten. Like, there's the first... I'm not advocating for splitting these three up right now, but it does sort of suggest that down the road, the end of that relationship is coming. Mm. And how will that factor in, like, long-term?
Marvez backstage with Jungle Boy Jack Perry asks what's next for Jungle Hook, and Perry's like, well, yeah, I've loved doing the tag team stuff with Hook, but I've done this before. I've kind of gone to the top of the mountain and it all didn't really work out in the end. So basically he refocuses himself on singles stuff and says he's going to be a champion again, but this time in the singles division.
Is Hook's not going to take kindly to this, or he shouldn't take kindly to this, I don't think. Mm. We're getting Hook versus Jungle Boy. Are we getting Hook as a heel? Because I think we should.
Well, I was a little bit, again, this is another example of like, because I thought Jungle Hook was one of those situations where even if you'd only ever set this up, even if you were long-term booking and you set this up as like a fun two-week thing, sometimes in wrestling you got to pivot and they felt amazing out the gate. So it's like, well, maybe just go with that. So I'm against Jungle Boy having ambition and maybe Christian turning on him, maybe he gets a TNT title shot and Christian costs him and that's the comeback, whatever. Or Hook being a singles champion.
Hook's got a championship.
That's it, yeah. Hook's got the FTW title.
Got a championship. Yeah. Like, I don't think any of this was by accident, to be honest.
Sometimes, like, take a look at what you've got and maybe just play with it a bit more. Like, Jungle, I don't know. Jungle, I was a little bit sad when I heard, rather than, like, getting into character and being like, cool, Jungle Boy's got aspirations. I get it. I think the logic is pretty sound, actually. But Jungle Hook were, like, a blast. I didn't see that coming.
I would like Hook to turn heel and be a legitimate heel singles player, then I would prefer that to seeing a Jungle Hook tag run, to be honest. I hope that's where it's going. If you think about Hook, it's time to turn him heel. He's not as over as he was as a babyface. I don't think they'll ever get there. Well, they will, but I think the heel turn is required first to get there. So,
Aye. Takeshita was in action next against Brian Cage. And they didn't mess about here. Forearms, a Takeshita line, and a slingshot crossbody to the floor from Konosuke. But Cage catches him and powerbombs him on the ramp. Takeshita comes back with a nice blue thunderbomb for a two count, but misses that knee in the corner. Spills out to the floor, but Cage does that brilliant suplex from the apron back inside that he's amazing at. Takeshita rolls through a buckle bomb attempt, hits a drop kick off the second rope. They're both down. Cage goes for a DVD, but Takeshita counters into a Liger bomb for another nice two count. Cage takes over again, misses the drill claw. Takeshita hits two brain busters, but Cage avoids the jumping knee, hits the F5. But as he goes to the ropes, Takeshita hits an avalanche brain buster, followed finally by the running knee to get the 1-2-3 and his first victory on Dynamite.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because the role of Bobby Fish will tonight be played by Brian Cage in that Tony Khan has this thing, this booking habit, if you like, where he'll beat the same mid-card heel or babyface quite a lot for like a six-week or month-long duration. Bobby Fish became a meme.
And I mean... Folks, where's the lie?
He felt like he was on Dynamite every week or Rampage. He had Danielson, he had Punk in that run. And I think I've seen a lot of Cage. And the problem with seeing a lot of Cage is that Cage is a pretty one-dimensional wrestler. This was very fun when it was at its best. Some of the stuff made my jaw drop because how can you physically do this? On that level, it was great. But yeah, seeing a one-dimensional wrestler as often as I have did sort of diminish my enjoyment of this match. I think it's a conversation we had, I'm going to have it right now, about whether Cage was the true scalp that Takeshita needed for this elusive, hard-earned, like months in the making triumph to finally get a big TV win on Dynamite. That had to do for the timing, because now you've got... At least in the moment, you'll be able to better suspend your disbelief when MJF wrestles Takeshita, and I can't wait for that. But I don't think maybe Cage is a slightly lower level. When I had this in my head, Takeshita, his first win, who could it be against? I did have that Moxley, Danielson, Omega tier.
Yeah.
And this wasn't quite that, and the match was... one of Takeshita's worst. It was still good to very good, but his level is just off the charts.
I think it speaks volumes that I had to check with both of you. This was his first win on Dynamite because they didn't make enough of it for me.
Well, he's won on YouTube. Yes. Yeah, and the story thread is he cannot win that big, noteworthy, on the path to true stardom now because he hasn't had that big win on TV. He has won a squash on Rampage, which I thought was a waste, honestly.
Yeah.
But it didn't really matter. This is his first big one, or at least they can sell it as his first big one.
Yeah, I've got that feeling that they've kind of flushed something a little bit here. It will contribute to next week, but I actually think, like, in hindsight, I think he could have beaten Takeshita here, still got to the MJF match as a result of the brawl. He was defending Brian fundamentally, so, and like defend himself after that thing the other week. So the defeat or not to Cage.
Gets really heated if he doesn't win here, though.
Well, I'd have had him beat MJF. Like, that would have been the win for me. When you said about the tier there, I'd have had him beat MJF next week. And like MJF, so furious that he's unexpected. He imagined in his mind his next match, if he even had to have it, would be Bryan Danielson. That a week is nowhere near enough prep time for a MJF.
There's a nice storyline as well of like, don't worry about Bryan Danielson losing.
Yeah.
Worry about yourself.
Well, it's kind of like a best case scenario in terms of pinning a champion, because you've given Takeshita an unbelievable platform win to pay off that story. MJF suddenly looks incredibly unprepared for a match with a 1 week build compared to like a 60 minute one he's got to have at a pay per view. So it's quite a nice story.
And you can
in
have a title match after the Danielson.
And then there's a contender set up for after the fact. So, and he could still, like, all of that could still happen, but I just think it would have had more to it had he lost here, because the match was like still really a Takeshita showcase, even if he'd have been defeated. Hybrid is kind of a bit redundant now, because almost every wrestler on TV is a hybrid. Yeah. You've got to be. But Takeshita has made it fun again, because he has this ability. I think I've said this in other matches he's had. He has the ability to like grow or shrink by about 5 feet, depending on who he's wrestling. Him like out-muscling Cage here is incredible. And it's the kind of thing he wouldn't do as much against a Danielson, because it's just, it like wouldn't feel right. He knows how to position himself to be himself as a babyface in everybody he faces. And I just think that's, I think he's such a valuable addition to this roster that...
He's a pro wrestling genius, Takeshita. Yeah,
that just don't be a little bit slapdash with his booking, which I personally think you have been here, but I don't think it's not going to detract from the heat for next week. I should say that, but there would have been really special magic to him getting the win next week if it was his first.
Renee's backstage with the JAS, who were being asked about the fact that they were accused by Starks and Andretti of cheating to win, and Jericho's having none of that. But he has a proposal that I think Garcia and Guevara came up with. He said, yeah, we put our heads together, and Garcia was like, don't put your against me, mate. They say it's the Garcia Guevara gauntlet. Alliteration. They've got to beat Cool Hand Ange, followed by Daddy Magic, who says something along the lines of, yeah, right! And then either Garcia or Guevara, they'll let him know if he gets that far at the last minute, basically. Jericho says, we call the shots, and I'm ready to whip your ass.
I hate this. I'm so bored of this entire storyline. I'm just going to run through everything I hate about it. Ricky Starks has already won. He's already beat Chris Jericho in a match that, when they do the sequel, will not be anywhere near as hot.
Nope.
It'll just be longer and quieter. Great. That's what I want out of wrestling.
Especially on a pay-per-view. Yeah. I need 20 dry minutes on an AEW pay-per-view.
On an AEW pay-per-view, what I want is a longer and quieter version of a match I've already seen on television for free. That's what I need. That's what I need in my life. Andretti was conspicuous by his absence here. I don't know if they've just dropped him out of the storyline or what. But ultimately, it's all about Starks at this point, which is probably for the best. Andretti's not ready. He is...
I don't think you're ready. You're Andretti.
You are such a dick.
I can't look at him now.
Because the weekend's a booty meet, yeah.
Right. Shut up, man. I'll knock you out. Andretti has a dorky quality, right? Even if he didn't, his character is like a up-and-coming blue-chip athlete, Jim Rotter.
An up-and-coming blue-chipper.
Andretti might have it, wouldn't he?
Andretti just needs to add some sizzle to his steak. And he maximizes his minutes against Jericho in the next step and the two steps to get over, according to Jim Ross's.
How good could Jericho be with a stint in OVW?
2020, you need a stint in OVW, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
So Starks looks like a dork next to Andretti.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So instantly, this incredibly suave guy who everyone was like, he's the next Rock. Bad. That's terrible. So I don't want to see the rematch, because the first one, it won't be as hot as the first one. And then you get to the trope. That you have to have multiple derivations of matches against the JAS because that's how things work in AEW. It's, I think MJF and Danielson and Tony Khan have done a fantastic job of making a really worn device at this point good. Like, they are running out of ideas, I think, to keep doing this well. They've managed it, in my opinion, with this MJF Danielson stuff, but anything else, not only will a pale in contrast to that, not only is it a bad idea to do it at the same time as that, but this is, we're 4 years into this kind of device as well. It's getting tired across the board. I thought until it was announced that it's a one-night gauntlet, that it was going to be like Rampage, Ricky Starks versus Matt Menard, and I'm thinking, no, that's not cool. It's not, they used to do this, so it would build anticipation for the big match. The big babyface versus the big bad, or the big bad coming for the babyface's spot. It's just procrastination now. That is the only word. And I hate to do wordplay and rhyme, but what used to be anticipation now is just procrastination. I'm so sorry, but those are the only two words. Shut up, man, you
that
dick.
Is good stuff.
Those are the
write that down.
Those are the only two words that actually
get your next book started. Call it that.
They're just procrastinating now.
It's particularly like you're encouraged a fantasy book in AEW, right? So, but what are you really booking here? Let's say Garcia beats Ricky Starks in a way that Chris Jericho couldn't, and there's there, because that's what I'm trying to be positive about with this story. Is this is like a really bad version of Punk, MJF and Wardlow. Punk, MJF angle is happening, the Wardlow one is hidden within it, right? So maybe the Garcia thing you want to believe is hidden within this kind of lame story, that's going to be the payoff that matters. So he beats Ricky Starks, great, and it's like, and Jericho secretly, yeah, I'm really pleased, he couldn't get his hands on me, but he's actually a little bit jealous that Danny Garcia did what he couldn't. So there's, you know, some angle development. Or Garcia just absolutely batters him, takes him to his limit, so Ricky Starks is half dead on his ass, and then Jericho hits him with a bat and pins him with a cocky pin. It's like, and now you're never going to get your hands on me, and we all know that it's because of Daniel Garcia. That is fine, but like the end result is still, even if both of those things, or one of those things happen, it's still Starks and Jericho on a pay-per-view. Like, this isn't the end, is it? It's not like, well, you got your match, Ricky. We're going to do a revolution, because like, that's what's happening. So to Sidgwick's point, it's even if it's good, it's delaying a kind of bland inevitable.
I'm not doing alliteration here. It is postponing a diminished return.
Well played. I wonder, you know, the Action Andretti thing. I wonder if Jericho sort of had a word like, you blew it, kid, and I'm not taking any more L's for this one. They're killing me in the comments. Like,
blew it, kid.
What did I do?
Then the Elite are back, which is great to see. They're in a gym. Kenny Omega's getting sprayed and glistening.
And I mean,
shut up, Bobby.
Oh my God.
There she is.
And they accept the challenge between them and Top Flight and AR Fox for the Trios Championships next week.
Yeah.
And then time for Bryan Danielson. Oh, no, wait a second. Omega says, you want to shoot your shot? You better not miss. And Nick Jackson hits the three-pointer from way downtown.
Love that. Loved it.
That's so good.
But who walks in? Who just so happens to be playing basketball at the same time?
Before you reveal this, one, please tell me you're watching this film and doing what I was doing, absolutely pissing yourself at this reveal. It was like, oh, they've ruined one of my best friend's days. Fantastic!
It was all going so well. And then in walks, nothing against Stokely Hathaway, or Isaiah Cassidy, or Ethan Page. Ethan Page, Stokely Hathaway, Isaiah Cassidy, and Matt Hardy, and they challenged them to a match on Rampage, along with... I didn't realise that Isaiah Cassidy's been doing this on his vlogs, so it's just random that he's like, oh, don't worry, we'll be ready.
That's like worse than when you put on the noise for the first
time. Can I just say, just to clarify, don't mind Isaiah Cassidy doing that.
Oh, no.
No.
Just not you.
Just threw me a little bit when I was like, what's going on here? But the Elite accept, so yeah, look forward to previewing that with you tomorrow, Sidge.
Yeah, I'll preview it then.
I knew that the Elite were selling after Escalera de la Muerte and the title change we said would probably come the first or second defense. First one it is. Going to be sad to see it. I cannot wait for next week's being the Elite because you're going to see all the missed three throws back to back to back. Yeah, like, Brandon, yeah, turn the camera off, start again. Like, yeah, that's going to be a really great bit.
Being the Elite. Like, they're really good at basketball, you know?
Booking.
Legit.
Are they? Oh, I suppose you had that really cool entrance where they were doing like all the flippy shots, didn't they? Like, yeah,
they are really good at it.
I just, the Elite for Rampage was inspired. We might have even talked about this yesterday. That's a perfect way. Like, Kenny's fine. Bring him back. This. And like titles are on the line. It's not even a contenders thing, so the thing has been established.
Jeff Jarrett's
now.
Lads are right there.
Yeah.
And they've already won a trios match.
This is it. You're establishing the trios are now in the same rule as the
saving
TNT.
For Revolution.
Saving Jeff Jarrett for Revolution.
Yeah.
Smart. Just the idea that like anyone like could have at least been a contenders match, but now the trios belts are anytime, any place. So you could have some right, no offense to Matt Hardy, some right absolute scrubs getting title shots. Like,
you were right to point out as well that the BTE tendencies here of the Elite who do love an invisible camera, they kind of do on BTE. They were just playing basketball at the same time. Why were they there? Bad enough when they're just lurking in the corridors of the arena in which these shows are happening. Oh, God. I'll talk about more tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To cheer Sidgwick up, what came next was Brian Danielson versus Timothy Thatcher.
Yeah.
There you go. Sid looks as excited to talk about this as Timothy Thatcher did walk into the ring with an injured person in it. His little smirking, little creepy, I was going to say, I don't mean it in a harsh way, but again, how's he going to find out about it? He's not on socials, so it doesn't matter. Timothy Thatcher's little face with just his scowl and that, it just, like, you couldn't, his facial hair and everything just works so perfectly with this character. Personified by early on, Danielson, yeah, here he comes. He hits his corner drop kick. Thatcher just eats it and then goes, right, shoulder first, you go. Puts him in a key lock. There's bits as well where Thatcher traps the bad arm and hits an overhead throw. They go to the ropes. Thatcher wants a butterfly superplex, but Danielson fights free. Top rope drop kick. Puts him in a choke, but Thatcher targets the arm and the wrist to escape. And they go into the corner. Big ref bump. And this immediately brings out Maxwell Jacob Friedman. He's putting on the diamond ring. I'm fairly certain he's also saying, too easy, as he's doing this. But who should run in to attack him? But Konosuke Takeshita, as you alluded to earlier, Hamlet, they brawl to the back. The ref's recovered. Thatcher puts his Fujiwara armbar on Danielson, who just gets to the ropes. There's a belly-to-belly throw. Danielson avoids it the second time. Release German, Busai Kuni, 1-2-3.
This was very, very good. I think a lot of people online, at least in terms of my timeline, thought this was great. I don't think I would go that far, but this is very, very good, very effective. The Pyrrhic victory, the works, the damage of the shoulders being compounded. It was a really unique dream match of sorts for that genre that you just weren't likely to see 8 days ago. You just wouldn't think it was going to happen. So it was all very, very good. I'll tell you what, though. I would put my analytical ability...
Oh,
in terms of shut up, man.
Your alliterative ability.
In terms
actually, that's 3 years.
Critiquing a certain wrestling match up there with anyone on the planet. I just would. I think that if you go and read a certain book on Amazon, Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW, 120,000 passionate and insightful words all about the formation and indeed rise of AEW, okay? There are several thousand words dedicated to the Omega Okada one match and the Revolution Tag. Those are the two. There's lots of match reviews peppered throughout, but those are the two that I dedicate because I think they're so fundamentally important to how AEW existed and how it existed at its best. I would put my work on those two matches up there with any match review I've ever read. I'm sorry, I just would. I'm lost, kind of, when it comes to Grapple That's what it's called.
Yeah.
I hate saying Grapple Frig or Grapple It's called Grapple
Didn't even like it when Graps was a thing.
So that's the genre, and the genre is the most intricate, almost anti-performance, anti-entertainment, worked shoot, hold for hold, chess-like defense for chess-like defense. I needed, and I want to put them over for doing an incredible job, Taz and Excalibur, to articulate this match for me. There were certain times when Danielson was trying to not let Thatcher see where his hand was slipping between his limbs so that he could get out of a hold, but he had to do it because Thatcher, if he saw that out of the corner of his eye, he's trained to defend himself as an expert submission wrestler to go, no, you can't do that. I would never have noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
I could get the general gist of the match and enjoy it. All right, he's going to hurt his shoulder. He's trapping his arm and adapting his usual offense to really target the shoulder. Like, I knew that, but just the little beautiful details that these wrestlers put in, like the Danielson slipping in the arm, that is imperceptible to me. And I was so grateful for Taz and Excalibur to articulate that and enhance this match. Good wrestling commentary really, really made this for me. And I think it was vital that you've got two guys with that level of perspective and insight, being former professional wrestlers themselves, to get this over because it's not the most TV-friendly genre. Mm. And subjectively, personally, I'm a bit thick for it.
Bingo!
Like, Taz and Excalibur did a fantastic job here. Should not go unmentioned.
I'm glad Sidgwick said all that because I was all ready for him to call me a grumpy bastard for just thinking pretty much the same. This completely delivered as advertised.
You don't like the advertisement?
Kind of. I just, like, I didn't not enjoy it. I just wasn't terribly captivated. I'm a bit of a sucker for glitz at the end of the day. Like, if this had a Gable or a Riddle against a Thatcher, and we've seen Riddle do this, where just for a split second they pop their hips and, like, spike him with a German as a way to counter what the hell's happening to them. Then all of a sudden, it kind of like pops me out of my chair. I'm like, right, let's go for more of this. And because this didn't have that, and nor did it need it, and nor would it have suited Brian or Thatcher in this case, it was just like a nice piece of business rather than something I was personally exhilarated by. But I'm the same as Sidge. I've seen loads of high praise for this from the people that love this. So they've completely satisfied the needs of those fans and didn't compromise itself, and nor should it. Like, Dynamite should still be the destination where all pro wrestling can live together. Thatcher was a working Nick Gage, I suppose. And Nick Gage was used in the exact same way. Like, you're going to run a gauntlet and now you're going to fight a deathmatch guy. If you're into deathmatches, you're going to get a lot of Nick Gage. If you're into grappling, you're going to get a lot of Timothy Thatcher. Thatcher performed really, really well. I don't want to see him in a Dynamite for another 8 months. You have this guy as a dangerous... No, I'm not, to be critical of him.
He's not a TV wrestler. We lived through his NXT run and reviewed it.
Like, he had to try comedy with Riddle. He had to do, like, I've got to be an even older man than old man Ciampa. Like, he's a tough guy to book week on week.
Maybe Creeps.
You preserve him as a threat, and he's all right. You get this again in 6 months, and I think it's going to be good again for the people that like it. It just, a very good version of a thing that isn't my thing.
Mm-hmm. Moving on, book
his face. What are your thoughts on his face?
Thatcher's.
Like, is it a bit much?
I thought you did a bit much here, if I'm honest.
Is that, like, his way of trying to draw in noobs?
I think it's like his way of, like, the major label breakthrough.
Yeah.
When you go from, like, Sub Pop to Geffen. And you have to gloss your sound a little bit. Uh-huh. I think that was him really trying, because he's not a thick guy.
No. Yeah.
He knows that this style plays much better in the intimate confines of a total snob dungeon. All these stinky... Not all wrestling fans are stinky, but probably the ones who like Grandma. And he knows, right, I'm on TV now, it's different medium,
There's more than 150 fans here. There's some in the back row. He's clever. He knows that he had to broaden it. So I don't know if he overcompensated. His face can be a bit silly for me, but then it becomes significantly less silly when you see the gruesome angles at which he was contorting Danielson's arm. Again, perfect beat for a chapter of this story. I would never want to see a wider story on television involving Timothy Thatcher.
That specific trait, he was in that system for like 2 years and needed nothing. And the one thing they probably drilled him to was to find the hard camera. So he's probably just thought, oh, I'm doing tele wrestling again. That's the one detail that I needed out of my game that they told me over and over and over again. Yeah, your holds are nice and all that, but your body's not great. Can you find the hard camera for once?
He's got a great body. He's got a great body.
Like, not their telegenic type of look.
People
but like,
want to shag Thatcher. Do you really? Know he's like one of the biggest sort of like cult hunks.
Is he?
On the internet.
Fair play. Yeah.
People want to bone him.
Watch this. Moving on. Buck and BJ have to break up a boisterous backstage brawl with MJF and Takeshita. Pat Buck and BJ Whitmer. MJF, Takeshita, brawling. Where is it?
Oscar stuff.
It's not even an Emmy dickhead. It's a podcast. What are the podcast awards? Why haven't we won one yet?
Don't
need this man
it.
A poddy.
We don't need it. I'll just check the charts. Oh, yeah. Oh, well. There we go.
But what number was that? Because people can't see us in the studio like stupid dickhead marks doing Roman Reigns impressions.
In the UK podcast wrestling charts, all of the podcasts are the twos because we the ones. That's why.
I would say put that in the awards folder, but it's full, so I have to get a second one.
Renee.
That was my impression of an elephant. It obviously wasn't very good.
Hey, guys, door noise.
Hang on, that's just reminding me I need to give a mention to someone who, on my replies.
Stacks.
No. We don't need to. He knows the adoration that holds him in. But I tweeted about us being on the brilliant Pro Wrestling TV Now the other day. And shout out to Andrew Ebling, because there's a photo for the three of us. Andrew wrote, I'm confused. Is the elephant camera shy? Great work.
Television. Some places in America, actual television. Linear eyeballs looking for a goddamn elephant on a podcast.
Anyway, what are we talking about?
Check out, if this is all completely inexplicable, check out our NXT coverage.
Yes.
On the Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Mm.
You could say for people who are the uninitiated, it's a...
Teachable moment! Teachable moment!
How many of our listeners do you think recognize the voice of Vic Joseph talking about Andre Chase on NXT?
And yet you're such a slick broadcaster, you made it seem like the most normal thing in the world. Is that the type of commentary you were talking about in the Danielson-Thatcher match, yeah? Like stuff that really brings the people in. Like Vic really helped you understand the Andre Chase
imagine
character.
Imagine Vic Joseph and Booker T calling Danielson and Thatcher.
Oh, he's got his arm!
The office needs you to work out the difference between these two. They're the same commentary patterns, aren't they?
Booker T's like, let me tell you something about John Thatcher.
I don't go in for, just to clarify, I do not go in for, and like, God love Taz. I love Taz. Mm. He very much is like, you're not allowed an opinion. you're just a fan. You don't know. I disagree with that, and we can agree to disagree. I needed a wrestler to tell me why this wrestling was good and clever and strategic, and like, their limbs depend on them doing this. So I was very taken by the commentary.
Did you hear, I forget which match it was in, but did you hear they mentioned how all their staff were offered CPR training behind the scenes earlier that day, something to do with like some heart charity that was involved in Dynamite. It was really great. And Taz, just for a second, just became Peter Sunurcher and was just like, yeah, I had that for the first time. It was like really amazing, really nice. Like, I'm so grateful for that. And Excalibur says something like, who replaced Taz between the commercial breaks?
Dr. Jones.
He's just a nice person for a second.
Dr. Jones.
So there's a brawl going on with Takeshita and MJF, and Renee steps in and says Tony Khan signed the title Eliminator for next week.
We're going to get to a production flub in a second, I think, but I want to really praise the formatting of the Takeshita run-in, because you almost never, a wrestler wrestles, and you believe it, right, that they do the job and then they go home. You tend to not get a wrestler coming back. It's not like, I compared it to Cedric the Death Small in the early days of Dynamite. The run-ins would from guys that you'd seen that night, but they stuck around to like look after their friends. It doesn't happen a lot. It's a fairly rigid format, and Takeshita being the guy in the hoodie was a surprising reveal, and then a reminder that he's Brian's his mentor, so why would not look out for him? I just thought that was like a nice touch. He's already wrestled.
And yet again, it's not Wheeler Yuta.
Yeah, again, another nice detail.
Mm.
We got a vignette about what happened with Dustin Rhodes and Swerve Strickland and the Mogul affiliates. They're targeting Brian Pillman Jr. on Rampage this week. And did he call one of his teammates Trench or something?
Trench rules.
Do you think Trench rules? I was like, it was a bit retribution-y for me.
Trench.
I'm already into this act. When they first came together, my immediate impulse reaction was,
huh? I'm scared of them.
I'm scared of them.
Yeah.
They accentuate that very rare and hard to do sinister presence that Swerve's conjured. Like, these people are horrible, I think. And I love the act. Call them what they want. Rules by any other name.
Is this the bit you're on about next? Where was Excalibur was like, we're going backstage now.
We're going to Renee and MJF.
Yeah. And I went, Renee looks different because it's Lexi Nair. And so does MJF because it was Roosh, Jose the Assistant, and Preston Vance.
They weren't to know, unless it's fake,
it's not
that MJF was going to interrupt them. What was going on here?
This is the same as the, well, it's not the same as, but the other week with Ricky Starks, the Ricky Starks Jack Swagger match, where it was like the graphic had happened before. So he's setting this match up.
Sloppy jalopy son of a bitch stuff, yeah, to be perfectly honest. And as well, MJF looked far too good considering what he'd been doing.
Well, that was it. Like, he was clean, wasn't he?
I like the fact that he covered for this because he walked in a different shirt, obviously. But he subsequently, I'm not sure with the timeline exactly, but he tweeted, Takeshi owes me a new shirt. So he's trying to explain it at least, because there must have been an ad break in amongst
doesn't
all this.
Doesn't feel like it's on the wrestlers, this, does it? Although it's really hard to...
Someone somewhere should have pointed out, hang on, I've been in a scrap.
Yeah.
You need to sell that until you go to the showers or something before you go home and you... I don't know, this is a flop.
I'm becoming increasingly stressed with the Brian situation, so at this point I've got briefcases of cash. Can we please just solve this? Because this is what it's doing.
Yeah, he goes in to see Rooster's MJF and says, please, here's a big old... This is for you straight away. This is a big old suitcase full of cash. Rip Daniel's arm off, beat him over the head with it. If you do that, you'll get many more briefcases of cash.
Just dinero.
And what was the other bit he said? My Spanish is...
He said how you say in Spanish, mid. But I don't know how to say how you say in Spanish.
What do you make of all this? Yeah, it's Roosh versus Brian Danielson. I'm not sure if I've mentioned that.
Yeah, that match is going to be incredible. I think Hampton's going to have a whinge about it, considering what he was talking about earlier.
Can't be asked. Can't be arsed with Roosh. Can't be arsed with this story anymore, if I'm honest. Just have him get beat. Stop this arm nonsense. Stop the... Just do this, and ideally you'll win anyway. But like, the main thing is, I'm not...
60 minutes of Danielson.
We're all cleverer than this at this point. Like, to your point before, Sige, and this is not bad faith criticism, I don't think. It is a better job than the Jericho one, and it is... They're doing... I don't think they're nailing this. I think they're doing an okay job of a well-worn trope, and... I'm personally out of steam with that. I don't think Roosh and Danielson will be that hot. I think
just wait.
Yeah.
It'll be absolutely unbelievable. Guaranteed, you'll be jumping out of your seat. It'll be unbelievable. Tell you what I liked here. The deadpan of dip translate. I thought it was a nice little reference to the fact that he's the real dip here. It's the self-loathing. He's the one who takes the piss out of people who can't speak English and does the konnichiwa, and ultimately he's the arsehole. So it was a nice bit of showing ass. His comedic timing was good here.
Are we doing more matches before Revolution?
I don't know.
When do you think his bit's ending? I thought this like... I thought
we Michael Caan? Was it Michael Sidgwick?
I don't know. Sometimes I get confused.
I'll swear at some point he said good. Four matches.
Like, he won!
I'll swear at some point he said four matches. Although maybe I just dreamt it, I don't know.
How many has he had so far?
That's what I was trying to work out as I was saying that.
Bandido, like, Cage,
Takeshita,
Thatcher,
Roosh.
So he's not four then.
He didn't say a number of matches, he said until a certain date.
Maybe that's
it. I cannot remember what the date is. In fact, last week might be the last date because there was that weird month.
Oh, February 8th. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cargill versus Red Velvet now for the TBS Championship. And, of course, Jay Cargill's record was 49 and... Red Velvet looking to take the title off, obviously. Red Velvet immediately attacks. Cargill just fires back and takes her out with a back elbow. But Velvet uses her quickness, sends Cargill to the floor... I think it's Layla Gray's there fixing Jade Cargill's hair. And that distracts her enough to allow Red Velvet to hit, I think it was a drop kick through the ropes. But Cargill caught Velvet coming off the apron with a crossbody and just sends her into the post. In picture, they should have really showed that. They did. They circled back to it, I suppose, after they came back from break. Cargill did that brilliant overhead press, walks from the floor, up the steps, and just hoists Velvet back in the ring, which is just always great to see that sort of thing. Velvet fights back, but Cargill just hits her with a pump kick out of nowhere to get a two count. Kiera Hogan's there to get rid of Layla Gray and any of her interference. And Velvet hits that spin kick on Cargill and has the match won. She's got her down for a three count, but referee Aubrey was busy getting rid of those two fighting at ringside. And by the time she turns around and counts it, it's just a two count. Velvet goes for the arm submission, but Jade Cargill, again, freakishly strong, swings Velvet up. Velvet tries to counter, but eventually gets caught with the jaded. 1, 2, 3.
Really quite like this.
Yeah.
Wasn't as good as the first match, which was lightning in a bottle. Jesus Christ, how are you working so well together when you've got so little experience between the two of you? But I loved the gorilla press slam, walking up the rope, the steps. It was genuinely fantastic. I watched it on Fight, so I saw it. But it's shocking if they didn't, which they didn't. Show that in full screen. It was on picture-in-picture instead. And these women's matches all too often get absolutely mutilated by the commercial breaks. And it's just not cool. And I know that's a bit now, but it is not genuine. It's not cool. Yeah. It's not on. It's bad. It's just, yeah, it's only the women. That's the attitude, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, we'll just, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. It's a women's match. All the chances. 300% of the time. I really liked Velvet slapping the piss out of her chest by the air guardrail. Like, she took it to her. And because she took it to her, you thought, well, she's bloody got it in the bag. So the visual pin was good. Not sure if I would have bought a near fall. That's the problem with this Jade push at this point. But over delivery.
Yeah, I mentioned it already. I do like that they think about the slick transitions into the Jaded, because ultimately, like, the Sky Blue match was all right, but I think that left more with people as a result of, like, how cool that finish was, and I think you get that sort of thing here. It's something memorable. I just think they're coasting with the Jade character, and it's less about the work for me at this point, because you do get spots like the carry them into the ring, and what, like, the moments where the visual pin here was obviously the idea that at some point, maybe soon, now somebody's going to get it, maybe as soon as Revolution, for example. But they're not thinking enough about who Jade Cargill is. She was jumped from behind at the start of this match, but she's the heel. Ostensibly, she's the heel, and has used the baddies in the past to help her cheat to win. But she almost finds herself fighting from underneath. But you can't fight from underneath when you're Jade Cargill, because you're always in charge. And then, like, and I'm not against anybody, like, oh, there's my kid, I want to have, like, a nice moment with them. But again, it's fiction, and just, I don't really know who she is other than incredibly powerful and dominant. And they contradict that with some of the other stuff they do with the character. And I just, because I don't think they apply enough thought to it.
Oh, would Statlander back?
If she was.
I think they're just killing time till the Bow Wow feud can really kick in.
God, yeah, that. Yeah, I just think they're coasting with her. And maybe it's a Statlander situation, but they don't seem to, like, think about the details very much of Jade Cargill. And that's been a problem for ages.
Right, before we move on.
It's time to play the game! Time to play the game!
Useless.
Sitch, what's the name of the game? But more importantly, what's the aim of the game?
The aim of the game, in order to shine a harsh, glaring, bright light on the obligatory token afterthought nature of this AEW Women's Division, despite, in the background, potential signs of improvement, there is one match per show. As I've just mentioned, that one match per show is mutilated by the commercial break. And it happens around about the same time in every show, because the bloody lads, TK and QT, want to get at the bloody men, and they want to tell you, don't have to worry about this one, lads. Don't worry about this for too long. It's not going very long, and the bloody blokes are back imminently, okay? If you see a woman, just remember, man's not too far away. So we want to get,
I mean, folks,
to the hour, minute, and second, the exact time
that you hear the first note of the first woman to make her entrance theme. Because that way, if we finally get it to the bloody second, it will become very apparent. Unignorable, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a bit of a problem here. So that's the aim of the game. And the name of the game is, well, this is Ladies' Night. And I'm thinking,
Yes, I like this new twist you've got in 2023. Shout out, as always, to Adam Blair, at AdamWilton4 on Twitter, who takes care of all the stats, all the...
data.
Thanks, of this. It was in the second hour. The women weren't in the first hour. So unfortunately, it's 0-3 for me. I'm going for Jade Gargle's record, but the other way around this year, apparently. You two both went in the second hour. Sige, what were the times that you both went for? Because we were quite close this week.
In descending order, Adam Wilborn. An absolutely stupid guess.
I mean, this is my gimmick now, and I've decided.
You're going to try.
Since I'm 0-3, I might
tank it every week.
Don't do that. I don't want to play anymore.
No, I'm not playing. I am playing. I'm just encouraging them to put in the first hour. So, if anything, progressive.
Adam Wilborn, 0 hours, 47 minutes flat.
Ugh.
As flat as Hamlet's heed. Michael Hamlet, 1 hour. 15 minutes and 45 seconds.
Lois Sidgwick in our Wrestling TV picture.
We've all got stuff we can say.
I'm a short ass.
We're all just a little bit different.
Sidgwick, the f***ing winner. 1 hour,
spoilers.
26 minutes and 2 f***ing seconds. Spoilers. Bitch.
Yeah, I said I was going to start.
Remember yesterday? Dad, he swears more than me.
I said I was starting the counter today. And,
oh, dear.
Do it.
There's one. More empty promises.
No, today. I said. Starts today and you've leapt into the lead on this podcast.
What about historical expertise? Can you, like, just do an estimate?
So we are 1 minute and 52 seconds off this week. 1 hour, 24 minutes and 10 seconds.
It's disgraceful. Like,
it's not great, that, is it?
It's not great.
It's another Sidgwick victory. He takes the lead. 2 correct guesses so far this year. 1 for Hamlet and nothing for me. And on the show, it was followed up by Renee Paquette checking on an injured Britt Baker after she was attacked by Saraya and Toni Storm in an attack that really could be described as...
It's not cool.
Ruby Soho runs in, says, everything all right? And Baker's like, no, not really. Where were you, by the way? Ruby's like, clearly I had nothing to do with that. Come on. She's like, well, you are kind of, you know, one of them. Baker doesn't believe any of Soho's excuses, basically. She says, I'm fine. No thanks to you, effectively.
Again, echo the thoughts from before. I don't hate this. I didn't think the acting was up to much in either. But the story's worth persisting with. It's a bit of mystery, a bit of intrigue. Soho was at the heart of getting her ass kicked when the storyline kicked off. So Britt Baker shouldn't really be, of all the people, shouldn't be casting aspersions on her, but you can understand why. It's not half bad, all of this. Just could do with, like,
more
matches off the back of it, because I think the skits don't benefit them as much as the actual in-ring does.
Put it this way, okay. Yes, they made the match between the Bunny and... Jamie Hayter from earlier in the night when the challenge was issued. There were two backstage brawls on this show. This is a bit of a cell phone from Tony Khan, right?
Point
two is. Backstage brawls. One happens before the other, right? MGF has a backstage brawl with Takeshita. Tony Khan on the headset grabs it.
7 days! 7 days from tonight! 7 days from tonight!
He makes that match immediately. Because it's MGF versus Takeshita, and it's going to be fantastic, and it's going to pop a rain. Okay? Earlier that night, Saraya and Toni Storm beat up Britt Baker. I've already booked one. Because it followed the other. So he's got Jamie Hayter versus The Bunny. So, all right, okay, jot that down. Don't have to, like, make an urgent announcement about that. But I'll jot that down, right, put that on the docket for one of the next TV shows. And then the brawl breaks out.
this uncontainable brawl between competitors who need to get at each other right now, right? Can wait. The exact same thing happens with men. Like, what, 45 minutes, an hour later? Nine days from tonight! Cell phone city, that.
Yeah.
Because he's established a rule that he'd broken before he established it because it was women.
He's not wrong.
No.
Main event time for the TNT Championship is a no-holds-barred match between the King of Television and the TNT Champion, Samoa Joe versus Darby Allin. I got to say, this is a mistake on my part. You know, it's early hours of Thursday morning. We say we always watch this. A bit bleary-eyed, let's say. And I don't think I've got my glasses on. So I'm watching this on my little phone screen. I go, that's a snazzy little jacket that Darby Allin's wearing there. And then I suddenly realised, oh, wait, no, it's a thumbtack jacket. That makes a lot more sense that he's suddenly gone a glitter jacket, like half Chris Jericho when he's...
He's looking sharp. You only know the half
of it.
Him? You're turning into him?
There's been such fantastic patter on this podcast. All three of us have, like, you know, we've done our best today.
So he charges immediately at Joe in the corner. John wants none of a man covered in thumbtacks, basically. And in the end, wraps his towel that he has around his neck round his hand to punch Darby Allin.
It's always there. Mm-hmm. It's not some contrived thing. It's always there. They've thought about this. It's just like, this was only an AEW creativity from the first 10 seconds.
Reminded me of a spot where Roddy Piper wrestled suspiciously against the Mountie in his T-shirt. And then the Mountie went for the shock stick and zapped him right in his chest. And Roddy Piper's like, I'm fine, dickhead, and then beat him easily. And then, what's going on about this like unique experience that we're pretending isn't unique? Piper rips off his T-shirt. He's got a second shirt on, but it says shockproof in, like, scribbled Biro. And it's like so you never normally work in your shirt, and I didn't know T-shirts did that.
Can I get one?
So, he rips the hoodie off Allin. And my favourite spot on this came immediately next.
Looks like a 2K glitch. It was awesome. How can you do that to another man?
Joe pulls a table out from another ring, and obviously his view's obscured because he's lifting up a table.
No, I'm talking about a different bit.
Yeah, but I love this. I love this spot. I know what you're talking about. Lifts the table up to set it up. Sort of peeks around the side of it, and the moment he does that, Darby Allin's flying through the ropes. It was great. I think it busted Joe open as well. But yes, this was the bit that I sense you're talking about. Darby Allin sets up the stairs to whip Joe into it, but Joe reverses. And Darby, I've watched this about three times. I still, like you say, don't really understand physically how it happens. Joe whips Allin into it. He hits them leg first, spins over, sort of clips the top of the barricade, and then still manages to sort of land on his feet on the outside or in the crowd.
Looked like, remember when the 2K series was not cool? And the just developers had a nightmare, and there was just, you saw these incredible, oh, this game's a disaster. Check out these ridiculous...
It was competitive, wasn't it?
Yeah.
These game's the worst.
Like, he's got the most broken game. Darby Allin, because he's such a bump machine, and he's so good at making monsters look even more powerful than monsters, performed a 2K glitch bump to make it look like Joe could do physically impossible things to him. He was at his mercy.
And they brought up into the crowd. I said this to you earlier. I was like, I guarantee Joe said to Darby Allin, I've taken my fair share of stair bumps in my lifetime. I think it's your turn to have it. So, yeah, he hip tosses him over a railing.
Oh, that my God.
Looked like it sucked.
Really,
but yes.
Nice.
Oh, my God.
Really nice stair law there, because Joe's most infamous one was against Sting.
Ah.
In TNA, that,
of course.
That hideous one he took where he just did that running kick and landed back first across six of them.
Yeah, do it here. It's built up and blah, blah. TNA.
That was like a pay-per-view made up for the title, but it's still TNA. Yeah, there's no such thing as a big night in TNA.
Darby Allin fights back. There's a desperation jawbreaker in there, and a nice call again from my Taz here. He chucks, Joe chucks Allin over the top rope. The way you'd fling a T-shirt, says Taz.
Is that the one where he just picked him up and just dumped him?
Yeah.
Two thoughts on this. Well, three. One, it was amazing. Two, it looked like... And this is similar to what Taz said, but this is what I just couldn't get out of my head. Like, you know, in the old Nitro days, when the ring would just get pelted by all this garbage and these beer cans and these sippy cups, whatever they're called.
Big gulps.
Big gulps. And reach down, throw it out, don't put that near me. That's what Samoa Joe did. With Darby Allin. And one thing as well, just so we're not complete marks here, okay? If you look at the bump, Darby Allin, through his skateboarding career, legitimately knows how to land on his feet. I don't know how this protects him from a fall, but skateboarders have got this ability to just realize, right, I'm 10 foot in the air and there's a concrete there. They can do this thing that mitigates the damage that they are going to have to their body. If you, Wilborn, took a skateboard out with you, okay, and just decided to ride it, and then, I didn't see that ledge, and it's like 8 to 10 feet, you would break your legs.
100%.
I would break my legs. You would break your legs. Skateboarders know how to sort of cushion their blow.
Cora Jade would have broke her legs.
Yes.
It's like you have to roll or something, don't you, as you're like, I've never understood.
Well, basically,
it.
Darby Allin did it.
Yeah.
For how gruesome this was, and it was shoot gruesome at various points, that bump, Darby Allin's done it on far less forgiving surfaces.
Yes.
That week when he goes skating. So there's not to be marks here. There's an art to doing this kind of thing. And I think it gets missed a lot of the time.
Joe hits a brainbuster, sets up chairs in the ring, hits a back suplex onto the edge of them.
I'm going to watch this again tonight.
Darby Allin gets powder and blinds Joe to get out of another powerbomb and hit a code red instead. He hits an over-the-top stunner and then goes to put the thumbtack hoodie back on and hits a coffin drop with it on for a brilliant two count.
I'm glad he only got the two because he took a while doing that. Mm. I think everyone was willing him to say, I'll buy it if you just put it around your neck.
Yeah. Speaking of taking a while, Darby Allin gets the switchblade out and starts going underneath. I mean, fair play. There's a lot of stuff there that holds the canvas and what have you down. Anyway, a few hours later, he exposed the woods. But Joe's rolled to the floor and suckers Darby Allin in. He dives after him. This was horrific to view.
Amazing. This spot ruled.
Goes after Joe, goes to hit that insane suicide dive that he always does. But Joe's recovered. And not only dodges it, but Darby Allin goes through a table and his legs, like, clip the ropes or something.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, this was amazing. I don't think you can learn how to cushion that one.
No.
can't quite cushion that one.
It's getting in someone's head. Like, just, there's a foam wall sitting in front of me. I still run 100 miles an hour that, even if I'm hitting foam. Imagine crashing through it. Anyway, here I go. Fast as you possibly can, and knowing that's the outcome. And Lefty Joe, it's so cool because I get to be the guy that like brushes my shoulder and walks away from that.
Yeah.
Like the cool hand Luke, and you're dying for that. Wrestling's weird.
They get back inside. Joe powerbombs Darby Allin onto his own thumbtack hoodie, then wraps it round his face. Again, no protecting you from that one. Darby Allin fights back, but as he goes for the coffin drop, Joe grabs the referee and sends him into the ropes. That crotches Allin. Perfect position for Joe to get him up and hit not just an avalanche muscle buster, but an avalanche muscle buster onto exposed wood. No giving that whatsoever. 1, 2, 3. Joe wins the TNT Championship again. He's about to celebrate, but out comes a returning Wardlow, who goes after him with his new haircut. Goes for a powerbomb symphony. Joe bails, and the show goes off the air basically with Wardlow killing security and about to powerbomb one of them.
This is a snuff film.
It's a great description.
It was unbelievable. Drama, violence, dynamism. Just the way that Joe was able to be 2005 Samoa Joe again. Look, I don't want to take anything away from anyone in this match, particularly Darby. It was all about his relentless motion, his just incredibly risky attempts to get on offense. I even liked, in this unintended way, but art can be good even when it's unintentional, how long it took. Because the longer it took, you're like, hurry up, he's going to kill you again, and it's going to look great. So maybe don't hurry up because I want to see it. I want to see you just take this horrific punishment. Joe took a muscle buster himself. That's how these things work, if you think about them too much, which you shouldn't, on the exposed board. So I really just want to reiterate my customary scenic route that both of these guys went through hell. This underscored Tony Khan's genius for me. This was Tony Khan operating at Paul Heyman's early to mid-90s, peak of his powers, accentuate the positives, hide the negatives. And I'm not saying Samoa Joe is anywhere remotely the same as some of the plotters that, if you go back, how did Heyman get some of them over? Through brilliant character work, booking, and just recognizing what little they could do. I'm not going to name any names. You know, that locker room sounds horrible. But there were certain wrestlers who you thought there's no, like, Taz could get over in any company, yes. Just the other companies didn't want him to get over. So it's not like a Taz or a Sabu who did, in fact, get over in multiple companies. Some of the others, how has he done that? It's because he was a genius. Joe wasn't them, but my God, the thing that haunted me about the rumors that Samoa Joe could sign with AEW, the things that Samoa Joe's work reminded me of when he didn't quite get it right, he didn't work as a babyface in AEW, was that match he wrestled with Karrion Kross underwater. In NXT, can you remember that?
Yeah.
It was. I just thought he's washed. He's not just main roster Joe, where it's not as sharp or as agile, but he's still got something. He had nout for me in that Karrion Kross match. That's why you don't book him against Karrion Kross. You book him against Darby Allin. You are intelligent enough to make matches that accentuate these wrestlers who've got incredible bonds with the audience, like Joe's always had. People love this man, which incidentally has me worried about this next chapter of the Wardlow feud. That could go badly wrong. If anything, Joe's stock has gone even higher than the last time Wardlow was on TV. So I'll let it play out, but I'm worried.
You were the last person on earth that remembered that Joe and Adam Cole had a match when we were pitching Adam Cole opponents. And it was like, oh yeah, Samoa Joe might be kicking around. They've actually done it, and it was bad.
And it was a gentleman's three. Yeah, Joe was just gassed. Like I said all along, you have to treat Joe differently. He's not the same. He isn't. This Derby feud was a promotional booking masterpiece from Tony Khan. And he ultimately said, that's the framework. I think it'll be a good idea. And the wrestlers deserve realistically more credit.
Yeah.
Saying, right, that is a good idea. Let's flesh it out. Let's articulate your idea. And this trilogy has been an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah, I couldn't have loved this match anymore. I'm weird. Me and Sidgwick disagree on matches like this all the time, and I've never been able to quite articulate when I'm invested in one with like loads of egregious violence and when I'm not. And I think it's a character-based thing because I was genuinely gutted that Darby lost here, and I want to believe that that was through the work rather than just because I would have preferred the booking gun. I want to believe that I was just really invested in the narrative, and I felt sick when Darby Allin started pulling the canvas back, not because I knew that there wasn't a bump going to happen on it, because there was, but because I was like, oh man, it's him unveiling the canvas, it's him that's going to eat it, and he's going to lose. The muscle buster spot was the one that came to mind straight away on boards. And you just, I really, really didn't want him to lose, because I do agree with Sidgwick's point about this program being a Paul Heyman-esque victory for the booking. But like, call Wardlow a wet Wednesday in Stoke, because I don't think Samoa Joe can do it against him. Like, I think this was a Darby Allin's success story, despite Joe's incredible and immeasurable graft and presence and aura and all those sort of things. And I'm really sad the reign's over. I like the narrative potential of how this reign came to an end. Darby Allin going to that length to risk it all for this belt.
It's got to be the best short title reign ever.
It's up there, isn't it? But like Sting, these are things that Sting will bollock him for. Like Darby Allin made egregious mistakes for a man whose body's fallen apart here, and he will, like, you know, Sting isn't going to tolerate that, or Darby Allin's going to have to learn from it. It's character stuff that I like. The outcome left, you know, said it already. It felt like a bit of a theme. I'm pretty cold on Joe and Wardlow, and it wouldn't just have been personally the comeback for Wardlow I would have booked. But he went down really well in the building. People were super happy to see him.
Yeah.
And there's going to be that, I think there's going to be that leeway with this Joe match, but it just feels a little bit like going back to something I was not terribly interested in the last time. So a bit mixed on the outcome, but the match itself, Jesus Christ, I as well will be going back and watching this tonight.
I'm intrigued to see, what they do to re-establish Wardlow beyond, like you say, just wrecking security like he did here and hitting some power bombs. I say that like it's just, hitting some power bombs. But I also, I'm weirdly pleased that Darby Allin lost, because that frees him up potentially to be next in line following Revolution for title stuff. If you book him correctly, you can't just have him go away for a bit and come back. I'd give him a statement victory or a tag victory or whatever you want to do with or alongside, you know, Sting in and around all this. Darby Allin and MJF, we said this yesterday on the preview, is ready made.
I know that obviously there's a singles match now with Joe and Wardlow, but is Sting, Darby, and Wardlow versus Joe plus two the party match at Revolution?
Is what?
Sting, Wardlow, and Darby versus Joe plus two people, the party match at Revolution.
Maybe. There is going to be a party match.
Who else would be on Joe's team? Who else could be on Joe's team? I've got one name. I just need another.
I don't know. Who's he associated?
The lone wolf, isn't he?
Yeah.
Bastard. So you could have, like, I don't know, Joe, Swerve, and then you could have Cole Carter in there and, like, have a mirror image of Sting and Sting. It's like, oh, my God. I'm seeing double here. Four Stings.
He's done it.
Maybe if you want.
There you go. Tick. Tick, tick.
Tick, tick, tick. Three alliterations. Who's that?
It was from Sunday. I had a rare chance for a nap after the Rumble, but I needed to wake up, get ready for... I just kept it on all day because I'm a lazy bastard. It's easier to turn it off once than to turn it off twice.
Right,
look at Matt Hardy slumming it in his jaw.
Let's know your thoughts on Dynamite on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Don't forget you can follow Adam Wilton 4 on Twitter, aka Adam Blair, for all the all
data.
Thank you for Lady Snipe. But for now, this has been the AEW Dynamite review. We'll be back later on today with a Get the Table all about NXT. but for now,
you went in a bit earlier, didn't you? NXT.
thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.